Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time, that's 12 to 3 Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Coming to you live and direct from sunny Southern California, where we had something weird happen this morning. Well, the U.S. Open is taking place in Torrey Pines, which, where I broadcast from today, is hour and 10 north of La Jolla, where Torrey Pines is located, but same kind of effect. It's called a marine layer. Where you get the June gloom. Do the June gloom with the fingers thing, right? The finger quotations, June gloom, which is where the marine layer, or fog comes over the coastal cities and then eventually burns off as it has in Torrey, and it's just beautiful. Dan Byer will take us out there half past the hour. You just heard his update. But this is, the whole thing is fascinating to me. Fascinating to me in that... we had a pop-up thunderstorm earlier today. Did you guys have a pop-up thunderstorm earlier today, Ramos? It was really...
I did, yes. It rained this morning.
That is very Midwest-like for Southern California. But now, it is the birds are chirping, the wind is blowing. What a spectacular day we have. And maybe it's because the Clippers came through as they always did, right? Wait, stop laughing. Yesterday, I told you that I don't believe in curses, except maybe the Clippers, they appear to be cursed. But all is right with the world, right? All is right with the world. Down their best player, the Clippers find a way to win a game they were supposed to lose. And of course, we knew that Paul George would come through, because if there's one thing you can depend upon in the playoffs, it's playoff P coming out and Paul George performing like he did last night, 37-16, 5 assists. He had 3 3-pointers. He scored 30-plus points in the last 4 straight games. 46-36, 90%, 60.2% total field goal percentage. Right? Paul George was a monster. Just like we all knew would happen, the Clippers would find a way. Oh, wait, no, that's not the Clippers. That's the beauty of sport. Now, it should be pointed out that I have 3 witnesses who work with me on the show. One is Mr. Dan Byer. One is Gavin Kinsel. And one is John Ramos. And I believe I said repeatedly yesterday that without Kawhi, they're not winning any championship. But don't be surprised if they might win the first game playing without Kawhi Leonard, because everyone on defense, you know, the Utah has to adjust. And then offensively, you get guys who step into bigger roles. And for a game or 2 games, sometimes that actually can be a benefit to the team. I did say that yesterday, right? I'm not going to sit here and I said, run to the ticket booth. The 3-point line is off. Go and take the Clippers. I, like anybody else, was holding my breath even when they were up late in the game. I think by 6 points, you're like, yeah, I don't know if this thing is over just yet. But the Clippers go in and pull off as unlikely an upset as you're going to see, right? Utah is the team with the best record. Utah has a formidable home court advantage. They have altitude. They have great fans, and it was completely full and a complete zoo. And heck, even Paul George has failed there, going back to his last year with the Oklahoma City Thunder, his last game in the Thunder uniform. He was terrible there. This is playoff P after the game.
You know, it was no secret. I knew I had to be big tonight and got to be big going forward. It was just no secret coming into this. And first, put faith in God, believed in myself. My teammates trusted me. T. Lou trusted me. You know, I thought we lived in a moment. We just played our hearts out tonight.
Yeah, they did. They did. And it was really special to watch. I mean, as a guy who has watched a lot of playoff basketball, I've always told people this. Winning on the road is better than sex. It just is. Because, you know, you don't really tell your friends about your escapades, right? But you can tell your friends about a road win. We went in there, it was 18,000 people, and then all of a sudden we walked out of there, and the owner and like three or four families and friends or whatever were there cheering. It's the best. You walk in with a bunch of dudes, no expectations. If you win the game and you come out with a duck, it's the best. But one of the reasons that you'd have to assume they were successful and comfortable is no expectations, right? Did you? I said I thought it could happen, but did I have expectations of it happening? No. Gavin, you listen to me. You put a little money on the Clippers yesterday. Hopefully with Bet Rivers, you put a little money. I mean, you put a little money on them
on the money line, just like you said.
Did you have expectations though of a win?
No, I did not think they would win, especially being on the road in Utah. Clippers hadn't won there in a long time. And then when Paul George, one of the most unreliable people in the NBA, is your lead dog, no, I didn't have great expectations.
And I think that's generally the feeling, right? Is that nobody really expected it. And so in many ways, a great way to deal with the pressure of the moment is the realization of, hey, nobody has any expectations here. That's why it's the old expression, you're better to be the hunter than to hunt dead. Right? All that's telling you is that expectations, in many ways, are what just weigh heavy on you. Not the actual pressure of the moment, but the pressure of the expectations of the ultimate outcome. And so that's the challenge for the Clippers. Can they find a way to still play on house money? To still, hey, everybody thinks we're going to lose, and we might lose, but we're just going to go out and try and hoop. Try and hoop. But this is, the NBA has so long felt like, to many fans, like that's what the Tim Donaghy thing really did, was it gave confirmation to many fans. Because if you actually look at the Tim Donaghy thing, there's his assessment of what was going to happen in a game. You know, like if there was a grand conspiracy for certain teams to win championships and to win certain series, then there would have been more than just one whistleblower who happened to be fixing games in the NBA as an official. But it does feel, or has felt for a long time, like whether it was the frozen envelope that gave Pat Ewing to the Knicks or LeBron James to the Cleveland Cavaliers, or the name brand teams that advanced in the tournament, it's felt like, hey, maybe the NBA gets what they want. And the truth is, if they got what they want, the Lakers would still be playing, the Celtics would still be playing, the Knicks would still be playing, the Bulls would be in the playoffs, and we wouldn't be left with Atlanta and Philly and Milwaukee and Brooklyn and everything that we have. This is Ty Lue after the game.
I'm very proud of the guys. Like you said, to come in and play in a hostile environment, 2-2, you know, in a big playoff moment, you know, when your best player is down, I mean, it just shows a lot about our team. You know, we're not going to point the finger. We're not going to blame anyone. If anyone's to blame, I'll take the blame and take the criticism. But our players all year long have been great. You know, no bickering back and forth. When things get tough, we come together. And that's the kind of culture I wanted to try to establish here. Just want to win. It's all about winning. It's not about you. It's not about me. It's about our team and about our organization. And we just want to win.
I can't tell you how impressed I've been with Ty Lue and what he's been able to do with this team. Super, 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 super impressed. And his patience. He doesn't lose his stuff, his vision. And look, Paul George was great. Marcus Morris was unbelievable. And what they've been able to do playing small is nothing short of game changing. Like, this is how you got to beat Utah, is how they're playing. Zubac played 8 minutes, and it was a -7. They even played Rondo with Pat Beverly. Rondo was awful last night. But the idea is they're going to do anything they can to make sure that they nullify on some level, Rudy Gobert's ability to dominate a game in the paint. He had no block shots, and he had only 5 offensive rebounds. considering he was at a substantial size advantage. Utah couldn't find a way to utilize him, nor have they been able. And the Clippers taking him away from the basket and attacking him and going downhill at him has changed this whole series. That's Ty Lue, kids. That's Ty Lue.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Hope you're having a great day. Doug Gottlieb Show is brought to you from sunny Southern California. My man Brandon Whedon's going to join us. I think we're going to talk a lot of golf with Brandon. I mean, just so you know, Brandon, of course, a former starting quarterback in the NFL, but he's like a scratch golfer, and he knows a ton about the NFL stuff, but also about the golf stuff, too. So we'll just do guy talk. Speaking of guy talk, is your dad's razor older than you are? Get him something new for Father's Day. A DSC six-blade razor is perfect for an extra close, precise shave. Get one now at a store near you as part of a gift set at dollarshaveclub.com/Doug. That's dollarshaveclub.com/Doug. We'll get to Zion's stepdad in a second and how it relates to it. So, Beyer, this is your first Father's Day. You're taking Sunday off work. Dan Beyer hosts our show. You'll hear him Saturday. Sunday is usually with George Reister. He's off this Sunday. It's his first Father's Day. Hey. Do you make any requests for Father's Day?
No.
Other than leave me the hell alone. I want my kid. And I want to go watch golf.
No, I didn't make any requests. And you know, we've been fortunate enough, especially when Fox had the TV deal with the U.S. Open, where we've been at U.S. Opens, and I've been there at final rounds. So it's going to be a little different, but I would, you know, obviously wouldn't trade it. So he and I will be sitting on the couch watching the final round of the U.S. Open throughout the day. But no real requests. I know my wife's got enough on her hands already dealing with everything, so she's doing so much of the heavy lifting. I'm just
ready to enjoy it.
He will be... he's going to be 8 weeks on Saturday, but 2 months a week from today.
Awesome. I think, Ramos, you can maybe agree to, like, honestly, look, when you first have them and you can't believe how small they are. And I think every dad, and Dan, you probably went through this. You're like, am I going to drop them? Like, no, you don't drop them. Right? Yes. They're not slippery.
I still think that.
Right?
When he's sleeping, I check if he's breathing.
Totally.
Please.
Yes. Good. Right. But I think like 6 to 8 months, maybe 5 to 8 or 9 months is my favorite because they get a little thicker, a little fuller, right? You feel like they're a little sturdier. They're not doing, but they can't really do anything. They just kind of sit in their bobblehead.
Yes.
And you can kiss them on their forehead as much as you want. And they smile at you. They know who you are. Anytime you see, and at that point in time, he'll be sleeping well through the night. Luckily, hopefully in his own room, right, where you guys are back, like on a normal sleep cycle. That's 5 to 9 months is really good. Now, then they start like crawling. It's good, but then you got to keep an eye on them. Like, put a bell on that kid.
You know, last night was unique. Last night, Lisa was able to go out and had a hair appointment. You know, first time in, you know, forever just because of dealing with everything. So it was me and the baby alone last night. And honestly, Doug, I try to, especially because NBA playoffs, I know we're going to be talking about it the next day, try to focus on all this stuff. But when the Sixers were up 24 in the third quarter, I flipped it over to Golf Channel and I'm worried about him and I'm, you know, making sure he's fed and trying to put, you know, get him to sleep, and next thing you know, he's finally falling asleep, and I'm like, I should check my phone and see what the final score was, and it was 105-104 with a buck 20 to go, and I was like, whoa, what in the world did I miss? But I really try to stay in touch, but if you were to ask me how the Hawks came back and beat the Sixers last night, yeah. I couldn't tell you. I mean, it was a foregone conclusion.
You, but it wouldn't be that. You didn't miss that much. It was sure. Just more they... couldn't score, and I thought they had a couple of bad rotations in terms of lineups, and Doc was searching for something there, and it's really interesting having, you know, look, I've coached the basketball tournament TBT, I've coached, you know, in Israel, there's professional level players, now coaching kids. And it is, though, the same no matter what you do. Like, you get caught with a bad rotation with your bench players and you can't get out of it fast enough, right? And, you know, like, again, hindsight would be you're up 25, get it up 30, but 25 should be enough. Okay, yes. So you didn't make any specific requests. Is there anything that you need? Like, now's the time we can send this to Lisa. Like, do you need, do you have a great cooler, right? Or do we need to get you in line for one of those Yetis or maybe Yeti drink cup? Do you need a new putter?
New putter. Yeah, that would be.
New putter, little Scotty Cameron.
Yeah, that'd be great. Okay. That'd be great.
All right, Lisa, Scotty Cameron putter, you know, there you go. Okay, Ramos, you're still popping out kids. You're well into your 80s. It's pretty impressive.
It is impressive, isn't it?
By the way, both you guys, you guys both are clean shaven like every day. I know Ramos has had a little scruff every once in a while.
I am clean shaven now, yeah.
I read that Dollar Shave Club. Do you guys shave every day?
I don't.
I shave every other day.
Every other day?
Yeah. I have sensitive skin.
Oh.
I use that aloe vera.
I'll make sure I speak, aloe vera. I'll speak softly.
I'm on like a 5.5 day rotation. That's what it is. It's about 5-6 days for me.
Yeah, but you still, I've never seen you walk in and be like, God, you look like I walk in 5 or 6 days, I look like a homeless person.
Sure.
Right?
Yes, yeah.
Part of it is I don't shower either, but that's not beside the point. Beside the point. Ramos, is there something you need for Father's Day?
I would like a sound bar. You know what those
are? TV?
Yeah,
yes. TV. Yeah.
Dolby Atmos.
And then the Bluetooth subwoofer that goes with it, right?
Yes, most definitely.
Okay. Those are, you know, you get those $150 to $500 everyone. All right.
Yeah, that's a good range.
Suzanne, if you're listening, sound bar. These are good. No, these are good things. Gavin, you're not yet.
No. But
not
yet. My brother just had his first child at the end of May. So he's going to be just like Dan celebrating his first Father's Day. So
that's pretty cool.
Going to be shopping for him today, actually.
Okay. You need to get something for your dad.
Absolutely.
And then you get something for the future father-in-law.
Yeah. A couple fishing poles. Takes care of it.
Fishing poles. Great. These are all really good suggestions. We'll keep them coming so that you have suggestions, you know, guy stuff. Because what happens is you're buying something for your pops or you're a young lady or you're an older lady and you're looking for something. You're like, what do guys actually want? Like, you know what? Dan wants a putter. It's not that hard. Ramos wants a sound bar. Just buy him a sound bar. You know, I think it's Yamo or Jamo sound bar. It's really good. It's really good. I would tell Suzanne, I would recommend the Yamo brand or whatever. And then Gavin doesn't actually matter. And you're getting fishing poles. Fishing poles work. Dan Beyer has breaking news. Let's get to DB. What do you got, Dan?
Breaking news from Fox Sports.
Doug, a report from ESPN says that Rick Carlisle has informed Dallas Mavericks owner Mark Cuban that he will not return as head coach. He had 2 years left on his contract, spent the last 13 seasons as the Mavs head coach, won that title in 2011, but hadn't won a playoff series since. Rick Carlisle not returning with the Dallas Mavericks.
What was the expression? What was the expression that Mark Cuban used? Wasn't it hogs get fed, pigs get slaughtered, or was it the other way around? Which one was it? Do you guys know?
I think you had that right, because that's what it sounded, that's what I recall.
Yeah. By the way, yeah, hogs get slaughtered, I think is what
so
it is.
So, can we credit the Athletic?
Pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered. Pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered. So it's I had it actually wrong. So I made sure. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
I was just going to say, can we credit the Athletic with decimating the Mavericks organization? Wow.
Yes. No, not with decimating. With that, they told us what happened before it happened. That's all. Right. They told you there was mass dysfunction within their front office and coaching staff. And okay, so now where's Rick? I've been told Terry Stotts to Indiana. And now, Rick, what happens to Rick Carlisle? Does he go to Portland? Like, he is an offensive mastermind. He has an NBA title under his belt. What happens there? Right. So, is it pigs get fed, hogs get slaughtered? Is that right? Do I have that right now? I think that's what it is. Pigs, or is it pigs get slaughtered? It's pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered. Isn't it ironic, though, that Mark Cuban uttered that phrase and he was talking about the NFL, and turns out it's maybe his own franchise. And it's interesting because that actually helps me into what I want to talk about, which was the idea of somebody's family and somebody's entourage making franchise decisions, like this report from The Athletic in regards to Zion Williamson. Most of the attention has centered on Williamson's family members' thinly veiled unhappiness with the Pelicans and whether those feelings seeped into the players' own views. For most of the season, certain Williamson family members voiced displeasure with the organization. Among the targets of their criticism was Van Gundy, who they felt was too rigid and demanding as a head coach, but also with the organization, which they claimed did not live up to what they felt they should be, the standard for a star like Williamson. When the Pelicans traded J.J. Redick to Dallas in March, it not only upset Redick, but it also irritated Williamson. Redick was a veteran with whom Williamson had grown comfortable with, and in the two seasons together, dysfunction Redick accused the Pelicans of harboring is said to have stoked some of Williamson's own feelings in regards to the direction of the franchise. The NBA has a major, catastrophic problem on their hands. Catastrophic. Okay? You cannot have a league if small market teams cannot keep their players. You can't do it. And you might say to yourself, hold on, dude. Of course you can. Right? Of course you can. The New Orleans Pelicans, the Oklahoma City Thunder, you pick out any of these franchises, like, why would I own a franchise where on a yearly basis, I may make some money, I likely lose some money. The value of the franchise, I get to make money on, but the only way to make money on a franchise is to sell it. I don't want to sell it. You know, I spent a couple billion dollars to buy or $1 billion to buy a franchise. Why should I have to sell it just to make money? Why can't I make money in the day to day? And you can't keep, like, we're talking the second year. Zion's been there 2 years, right? 2 years. Now, look, the Pels own his rights for the next 3 years on just the first contract alone. And just so you know, the family, mostly the stepdad, is a royal pain in the ass. Okay, these are not secrets that I'm sharing with you, but and all you have to do is, I don't have any personal knowledge of it. Zion, by all accounts, a great kid. A great kid. And he plays basketball generally with great joy. But you have all these different kind of factions working. You got Brandon Ingram just got the big contract. Does he function all that well with Zion? You know, you have a guy running the franchise who also runs the Saints franchise. Oops. You have a market which has already lost one NBA team. And frankly, I think most people in the know that New Orleans, not really a good enough market, a big enough market, a vibrant enough market to really, truly support an NBA franchise. That's the truth of it. Okay. You got to make a decision here on Lonzo Ball. What are you going to do there? Josh Hart, who got hurt and is a vocal leader, but not nearly as good a player as you need to be to talk as much as he talks. And then you have Zion. And remember, Zion wasn't going to Duke. There was several other schools in there. And then late, he ends up going to Duke. And most people believe the stepfather was the one who steered him there. Now, look, it worked out great. But then if you remember, there was an agreement to work with some small-time marketing woman, I believe it was a woman, marketing agency, only to be usurped by another bigger deal while under contract for marketing with a smaller deal. In other words, they can't make up their mind. They don't know what they're doing. You got a small-time stepdad who's got a golden lottery ticket, and he's not wrong to want better for Zion, to want star status for Zion. But like, look, this is the deal. You're in New Orleans. You got to try to figure out a way to make it work. And what I always find funny is, you know, there's, you know, David Griffin didn't do this and Stan Van Gundy didn't do this. Hey, Zion Williamson wasn't in shape in any of the chances he's gotten to be in shape until this year. Now Zion Williamson has to go about discovering if he can shoot the basketball. But he had a pretty damn good year. Without a jump shot, he at times was dominant. Would it have worked in the playoffs? No. Did they make the playoffs? No. Are they a finished product? No. It's part of the process, but man, what a mess. Just think about it. If you're Adam Silver, you've already had LeBron James change places, you know, three different times. Then you have James Harden, who quits on the Houston Rockets. Now you'd have Zion Williamson after his second year having this unhappiness to the point to where, you know, you have no idea the future with the franchise. This is a mess. And it also relates to the NFL. And while I that's why Houston was doing what they're doing with Deshaun Watson. That's why Aaron Rodgers and they're doing what they're doing in Green Bay. We don't roll like that. We don't roll like that. And you cannot have a leak. This is why, by the way, I don't know if you guys saw this Vince Goodwin story yesterday. Vince covers the NBA, but he reported that John Calipari would truly be open to leaving college basketball. Why do you think that is? So you had Roy Williams retire, Mike Krzyzewski retire, and John Calipari thinking about making the jump yet again. Why would that be? And oh yeah, Brad Stevens could have had the Indiana job. Didn't want anything to do with it. Why? Because it's almost impossible. And it's not a fun job to have to build and rebuild a team every damn year. And oh yeah, by the way, you got to deal with these parents. It's never the kid. It's almost always the parents. What a mess. What an absolute abject disaster.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Jamal Mosley's not only a friend of mine, but he played for my dad in AAU basketball out of San Diego, went to CU, Colorado. And Luka Doncic, apparently a strong supporter of Jamal Mosley, he's got the things that are needed for a head coach. Doncic said after Mosley's one-game fill-in for a win over the Knicks, he can be the head coach for sure. I think what you're seeing in the league, and this is really, really interesting, is everyone's going to talk about the player empowerment and players, player empowerment and players dictating where they play. But, you know, look, I will tell you this. What's needed in Boston is a guy who the players feel like relates to them more. Somebody likely who played in the league. Jamal Mosley didn't play in the league, but because he's younger and has been around the league and is just, again, you're talking about 20 years difference between he and Rick Carlisle. I think those are the guys that these players feel like they're going to listen to. I'll tell you right now, I don't know if you guys, so do you remember what happened when the Lakers were going to hire Ty Lue? Byer, do you remember what happened, why the Lakers couldn't hire Ty Lue? What happened in terms of?
It escapes me.
He turned it down because he could only get 3 years, right?
Oh yeah, that's right. Yep. Right?
And Frank Vogel took the 3-year deal. That was 2 years ago. He's coming into his final year. And we've heard this from so many different professional head coaches, which is really simple. Like, really hard to coach without 2 years on your contract in the NBA. I'm telling you right now, Frank Vogel will be coaching for his job starting the very start of next season. And it'll be more difficult for him to keep his job than it will for him to lose his job. And why is that? Frank Vogel is seen as kind of that older generation, didn't play in the NBA sort of guy. If you're not paying attention to trends, what are you paying attention to? Right? And look at the coaches who are out. Now, I do think Terry Stotts, I've told you, and Terry, of course, played in the league and has done a tremendous job in Portland. And it wouldn't surprise me if Rick gets another shot because he's so well regarded and he has won NBA championship. But when you look at the sum total of who's going to get these jobs, I think it'll all be guys in their 30s and 40s maybe, you know, a guy who played in the league a while back who's in his early 50s. But, you know, guys in their 40s who have played in the league or been around the league a long time and the players feel like is easier to relate to. Those are the guys who are going to get these jobs.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sports book, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, the other big NBA story is Rick Carlisle has, I guess, resigned. He had 2 years left in his contract. And he met with his owner, Mark Cuban, over the last several days. And Cuban fired the GM in Donnie Nelson. And I think he saw the handwriting on the wall. My guess would be that Rick Carlisle has another job in his back pocket. Otherwise, you don't walk away from coaching Luka, no matter how much Luka was fighting you. Do we think that job is Milwaukee? Maybe. I don't think he's coached in Indy before. I don't think it's going back there. He played for the Boston Celtics. I don't think that's, but could be. Could be. I don't think it's the Pelicans. I don't think you leave the Mavericks to go to the Pelicans. Portland, maybe. Right? Portland, maybe. I also think Jamal Mosley is rumored to be the favorite for the job. I do think that with the 7 openings currently, you're going to see a majority of them filled by guys who played more recently, and especially guys who played in the NBA. I think that's what was missing in Boston in terms of communication. And I think it's probably what Dallas is looking for. But Jamal Mosley, he didn't play in the NBA. He's a very good college player, and he's been in and around the league for a long time, even though he's in his early 40s. Younger guys, early 40s, played the game or been around the game, but have some NBA swag, those are the guys who get this job. But pretty interesting on all the things that have, you go back yesterday, you had Stan Van Gundy getting fired. Now you have this story that Zion Williamson is unhappy with the Pelicans organization. You've had a litany of other coaching changes. Scotty Brooks loses his job. I don't think Rick Carlisle is going to coach Brad Beal and to coach potentially Russell Westbrook. I don't. That one's going to be a hard one to fill. The Boston Celtics are open. Of course, Carlisle played there. They do have talent, but that does not feel like what they probably think they've been missing in a guy who's younger and more relatable to the current roster. I don't know. I think the whole thing is fascinating. Rick Carlisle stepped down. This is from Mark Cuban. Rick informed me today about his decision to step down as head coach. On top of being a tremendous basketball coach, he's a friend and a confidant. Rick Hope helped us bring the Larry O'Brien Trophy to Dallas. And those are memories I will always cherish. I want to thank Rick for all he gave the franchise in the city, and we wish him the best. Pelicans are open. Celtics are open. Mavericks are open. Blazers, Pacers, Magic, Wizards. Yes. Gavin.
We've talked about it a ton. It's always amazing to me, though, how the story comes out on the Mavericks, and we hear about Luka's frustration. A few days later, his coach is fired. This story about the Pelicans came out and conveniently Stan Van Gundy is fired. It doesn't happen as much in the NFL, but in the NBA, the players, you can see the through line, you know, they look at the superstar and whatever they get, they want it. I don't know. I know Magic did it, right? Like, I mean, the first coach he had with the Lakers, you know, he pushed him out. So it's just fascinating to me how the NBA works in that aspect.
I think so too. Look, I think there is players know, right? Players know. and they know the dysfunction within locker rooms and coaches and guys they bought into and messages. And I'm sure that's what happened in Boston, which is Brad is very good, very well respected in coaching circles. But whether it was his message or his staff's inability to relate, like it did not feel like they were running anything. It felt like they were all playing take 'em ball, and they were not the team they needed to be. And I think that got exposed. I think that's why you're seeing such turnover there.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Jovan Buha joins us. Jovan, I don't know if you know this expression I usually use, which apparently Jacob deGrom does not agree with, which is no one asks for a second opinion on good news. Right? No one asks. Do we know for sure, and you would know, has it officially been announced that it's an ACL for Kawhi?
It is an ACL. We don't know the extent of it fully yet. I've heard some positive things. I've heard some negative things. So I think I'm kind of waiting on the official news. I think that should be coming out shortly. But it does seem most likely he's going to miss the rest of this series and potentially the playoffs. Obviously, if it's a torn ACL, we're talking about an injury that could keep him out half of next season at a minimum, if not longer. So, this is a really big injury update for the Clippers. But I think it's incredible what they pulled off last night, given all of that, because I think, without Kawhi Leonard, I think most people are picking the Jazz. And for them to go in there and pull that out, I thought was incredible.
I did, too. I would also point out, and we talked about on the show, that, one, the Clippers have played without Kawhi an extensive amount of time, both the past 2 years, so there was a little experience there. And then, two, it's really hard for the opposition, right? Because all of a sudden now, all the expectations are, well, you're at home, you're supposed to win anyway, and you're at home and they don't have Kawhi Leonard, and you don't really know how the Clippers are going to play, who they're going to – everything you've been doing is to prepare – to adjust to the adjustments, and now you've got to adjust to almost a completely different rotation of players. So I thought if it was going to happen, a win was going to happen, last night was actually the night. What did Ty Lue do with those minutes? What did he do that you thought was creative that allowed them to get the win outside of Paul George was awesome?
Yeah, I thought, sticking to what had worked, staying small, not changing that game plan, because I think – it's one thing to stay small when you have an all-world wing like Kawhi Leonard who can do so many things on both sides of the floor, but I think some coaches might have gone more traditional and been like, we don't have a guy who can outright replace Kawhi. I mean, even Paul George stepping up, he's not fully replacing Kawhi, and then even if he is, then obviously someone has to take on that burden that Paul George normally takes on, because it's not just like him scoring more doesn't replace both of those things. So I thought him really sticking with that, playing Terrence Mann more, who has been really key for them in the playoffs. I mean, he had that late dunk on Rudy Gobert and just was making plays. And, isn't a guy that has really shot the ball that great so far in his NBA career, but just makes plays. And I thought that was a great example of, not getting baited into taking the three. Rudy was playing off of him a little bit. Kind of pump fakes, Rudy starts to close out, and then he drives by him and dunks on him with the and-one dunk. So I thought, really the resiliency, and I saw, I'm not covering the series, but I've been following it, and I saw some of the quotes, and Ty just saying basically like you said, we played without Kawhi, and we're not going to change anything, and that's really what it felt like. It just felt like everybody else kind of did a little bit more, and Paul George obviously did a lot more, and that kind of cumulative effort ended up producing, I think, one of the biggest wins in Clippers history because, I think even with Kawhi potentially being out for this series, I think it's a really tough pill to swallow if you're the Clippers and your first 2 years of Kawhi and PG are second-round exits. This was a team that was the heavy favorite, for much of last season and was expected again to be a contender this season, especially once the Lakers went out. So I think for them to lose in the second round would be a really tough blow for that franchise. And who knows? Maybe they do advance now. And I would still favor Phoenix, even if Chris Paul misses a couple games, just with the way they've been playing. But this Clippers team is resilient. And I think that's a key difference from the team we saw last season and even some Clippers teams past.
They are resilient. But there is obviously there's going to be a talent drop off, and
for sure
they're trying to find minutes for Rondo, and that's a struggle, right? I mean, that just he can't play. He can't, you know, he can't, and they try to play him with Pat Beverly. It didn't go very well. Is there anything else? Does he have anything else left up his sleeve, in your opinion?
I think it's just sticking with this, because I think what you've really seen, and you've seen this at times in previous postseasons, like, it is really hard when a team fully downsizes and has basically five guards and wings out there who can all shoot or drive. It's hard to keep Rudy Gobert out there. And because of his status as an all-star, the reigning, you know, three-time defensive player of the year, like, Quinn Snyder is not going to bench him. That's really his last resort. And I think the Clippers are testing that. And, you know, I felt there were several key possessions last night in which the Clippers exploited just having a 7'2" slower guy trying to close out and rotate and re-rotate and make several rotations on, you know, multiple, you know, defensive possessions. It's just, that's hard for any 7-footer to do. And that's why you have seen, as the league has downsized and you know, more pace and space and more 3-point shooting, like, it is harder to play non-athletic centers. And Rudy Gobert is great at protecting the paint. He's great at protecting the rim, but he's not great at closing out. He's not great at rotating to guards. Like, that's just not his forte. So I think the Clippers have the formula. It's obviously going to come down to, are they making shots? I mean, we've seen the wild swings with their shooting this season, you know, in their 0-2 losses to both the Mavericks and the Jazz. They did not shoot the ball well. In the two games that they responded with winning, they shot the ball well. Like, there's been some very violent shooting swings with this team. So to me, it's just stay small, stay attacking Gobert, make him have to rotate, make him have to defend on the perimeter. And if you shoot the ball well, you know, PG gets you 30-plus points, gets to the free throw line again, I think they could win this thing. Now, again, I don't think they could beat Phoenix. I don't think that they if they somehow beat Phoenix, I don't think they could beat Brooklyn or whoever comes out of the East. But I think it would be nice for the franchise, even with Kawhi out, to make a conference finals run.
It's Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Let's say they pull this thing off, right? Let's say they pull this thing off and they beat Utah, more likely game six, but possibly game seven. What would it mean to the franchise to win one more game, considering the devastation that had to feel going into yesterday?
It'd be huge. You know, I think that, especially for Paul George, right? Because we've all made the pandemic P jokes and replayed the video of him hitting the side of the backboard. And, I mean, he's seemingly just continues to throw himself under the bus with some of the quotes he has and just how tone deaf he can be at times with some of the things he's saying. But he's really stepped up. And you know, I thought tonight was a really big legacy game for him, because it wasn't easy. You know, the situation was there for the Clippers to just fold over, lose by 20 points, be like, okay, let's go back to LA and try to even this series. And for Paul George to have a stinker of a game. And we've seen him do that in the playoffs before. We saw it happen last postseason. And, you know, that's why I think there is, you know, some of the negative perception of PG throughout some of his recent postseason runs, but he really stepped up. And I think his lows have not been as low this postseason as in some of those OKC runs and last postseason. And I just think overall, you know, he had a really good year, made all NBA. And I think it's kind of rewriting some of the narrative on him. And that's all you can really ask for. So, I mean, I think it's huge for the franchise to get their first conference finals berth. But it's just as big for Paul George to kind of put some of that you know, negative talk to rest of, I am a superstar. I am still a top 15 guy, and I'm going to go out and prove it. And I'm going to be the best player on the floor against a team that also has a couple all NBA guys, you know, on the other side. So I think it's huge for the franchise, because they've never gone this far. And again, I think they'd be heavy underdogs against the Suns, but you know, for them to even get that far, I think would be a success in its own right.
It's Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Any sense of this changing Kawhi? Like, there was talk, at least, hey, Kawhi could be on the open market if they lost early. Now they were in position to win this series then he pops up getting hurt. Have you been able to make any contact as to what his plans are in the long-term future?
I think there's a lack of clarity from what I've heard. As far as, you know, I don't think he has informed the team yet that he's going to re-sign. But I do think it is trending in a positive direction. I think had they lost in the first round to Dallas and you know, remember, they were down 2-0 and down 31-9 in the opening minutes of that first quarter of game three. Like, we're looking at potentially a sweep or a gentleman's sweep. Had they gone out that way, I think there would have potentially been some self-reflection of, is this the right situation? You know, is this the way I want to end my career? Do I trust this organization? But for them to bounce back and win that, for them to bounce back from the 2-0 deficit this series and potentially win this, and for it to be kind of out of his control with him having that injury, I do think things are trending in the right direction. I mean, I also think if you're Kawhi, like, you know, we saw it with Anthony Davis when he re-signed with the Lakers. You know, he could have done the Kevin Durant, LeBron James tactic of, okay, you know, 1+1, 2+1, I want some flexibility, I want to test the market, I want to put pressure on the team. But AD signed a 5-year extension because he was like, I've not been healthy, and I want to secure as much money as possible and have, you know, just some security with my career. I think Kawhi should honestly take the same route. Like, I don't think this should be a 1+1, 2+1 situation. Like, you know, we know he's had the quad injury. We know he's load managed. Now he has this potential ACL injury. And you know, you look at a guy like Klay Thompson, who had been as healthy as anybody up until he tore his ACL. And then, you know, tries to make his comeback and ends up tearing his Achilles on the same leg. Like, I think if you're Kawhi, you even if this isn't a serious injury, you got to really think about securing that money, securing the years, and just signing a 5-year deal with the Clippers or going elsewhere and signing a 4-year deal. But for me, if I'm Kawhi, I got to get that guaranteed money because I have dealt with injuries nonstop for the past few years, and you just can't be confident in him remaining healthy. So I think things are trending in the positive direction. You know, PG's locked up. I think they're obviously confident in Ty Lue. They think he was the right guy for the job. I think he's proving that so far. And I think Kawhi is most likely going to re-sign this offseason, sign that extension for 4 or 5 years.
Feels like game six, the pressure's still on the Jazz. Is that fair?
I think so. I mean, if you're Utah, you know, as you said, I thought it was hard to game plan for them, and they talked about that. I mean, they were going back to, like, regular season matchups of, like, the Clippers versus, you know, random Team X. How did they play without Kawhi? But, I mean, if you lose these two games without Kawhi Leonard playing, I mean, yes, Mike Conley's out. Yes, Donovan Mitchell is somewhat hobbled, but he just put up, what, almost 40 points in game four? Like, you know, he's looked fine in this series despite that ankle injury for the most part. So I think it's just an utter failure for Utah of being the one seed, you know, having, I think, the conference finals, you know, it, looking like in your favor, and then having this situation unfold. Like, I mean, that to me is the type of potential core-altering situation where we have to really think about our core of, we've not been able to make a conference finals with this group. This should have been a layup with no Kawhi. Like, we got to really think about things.
Awesome stuff, Yovan. I mean, it's been really good following you and great having you on. Let's see what happens in game six. We'll talk again very soon. By the way, I know you covered the Lakers as well for The Athletic. It hasn't been mentioned, but, you know, the reason Ty Lue turned down the Lakers was it was only a 3-year deal, right? Mm-hmm. And so that was, you know, and now he gets the, so Frank has a 3-year deal. He has only 1 year left. There's been no talk of an extension at all. What's going on with the Lakers?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, Frank was asked about it at his exit interview, and he said that it's something he doesn't really want to talk about, but he's committed to the Lakers. He wants to remain with the Lakers. Rob Pelinka was also asked about it, and that obviously is probably the more important answer. And he said Frank has done a great job, that he understands the context of the season, that, you know, the team obviously dealt with injuries at inopportune times, and that the coaching, you know, the organization loves Frank and his coaching staff, and they're behind them. Now, obviously, actions speak louder than words, and the fact that Frank has not signed an extension, I do think is interesting, you know, and Initially, you know, the Lakers were looking at Ty Lue, of course, but also Jason Kidd, remember? And there was that kind of speculation that when Jay Kidd was brought on the coaching staff, that it was potentially as sort of pressure on Frank of, if you don't perform, you know, we have another guy right here who can step over and be the head coach. So I think it would be foolish for the Lakers to move on from Frank after this season. I mean, I really don't know how many other buttons he could have pushed once Anthony Davis was out. And I mean, they just got demolished in those last couple of games, you know, made the late run in game six, but the series was essentially over once AD was out. So I think, I mean, he won a championship in his first year. Second year was derailed by injuries. It's hard to judge him in a negative light. So I think maybe it's a situation where they're going to give him that third year and then make the call. But if I was them, I would at least look for a 1 or 2 year extension with him, because I personally think he's done a good job.
Jovan, great stuff, dude. We'll talk soon. Thanks so much.
Sounds good, Doug. Thank you.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.